chance of precipitation tomorrow. And rain continues through tomorrow night, going down to the lower 40s. Monday, the clouds are still hanging around, and it looks like there's rain likely, with highs in the mid-50s on Monday. Stay tuned. Now and Then is coming right up. Support comes from listeners and from the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com. I'm Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then. Today's program, we're going to be listening to a special category of music, solo recordings, featuring the music of Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, and Prince. So I'm fascinated by singer-songwriters, a person who writes and performs their own music. And, you know, that's been going on for, you know, as long as music has been being written, several thousand years. But there's something that's happened in the past 100 years or so that was never possible before. And that's when one person does a solo recording, they write the song, they produce the track, and they play all the instruments, the drums, the bass, the acoustic guitar, the lead guitar, the keyboard parts, the backup percussion, the lead vocals, and the backup harmonies. It's an incredible feat. And there's a different situations that might arise that would make an artist do a solo recording. So today's program, we're going to be listening to three different artists at the peak of their powers, doing completely solo recordings. Paul McCartney released his very first solo album in 1970, and it's called McCartney. And it turns out that when John Lennon announced on September the 20th in 1969, these things are historical, right? He said he was going to leave the Beatles. And, you know, there'd been a certain tension growing in the band, and Ringo had left for a couple of weeks and come back to a studio full of flowers, and George had said, you know, I don't care anymore, I'm leaving, and, you know, and it didn't really happen. But when John Lennon said, I'm leaving the Beatles, it wasn't a question. He was leaving. And Paul McCartney had a bout of severe depression when John told him that in September. And he withdraws from the rest of the band and from the world in general. And he goes up to Campbelltown, Scotland, where he has a farm. And he spends the next several months alone with his wife, Linda, and their two children. And this is, you know, Paul just kind of disappeared, fell off the radar. And that was the height of all that stuff, you know, Paul is dead, the conspiracy theory going on in the United States. And so they had to break, you know, the journalists from BBC Radio and Life magazine, you know, they had to you know, investigate and track him down up to his farm to confirm that he is indeed alive. He's just not talking to us. So there he is, months alone in Scotland, and he's severely depressed. There was a biography written about Paul McCartney by a man named Howard Sounds. It was published in 2010, and he writes about things for Linda, that while they're in exile up at High Park, it was, quote, this was grim for Linda. She had a seven-year-old and a baby to look after with a husband who was depressed and drunk. She later told friends it was one of the most difficult times in her life. While Paul reflected that he might have become a rock and roll casualty at this point in his career. So she encourages him, you know, to continue to make music. So it's Christmas. It's a few months later when the McCartneys return to Paul's house in St. John's Wood in London. And he's got a four-track tape recorder at home. It doesn't even have VU meters on it. And that's when he starts to record again. He comes back to music. That had to be a courageous thing for him to do after being with the Beatles. So he starts to record. We're going to hear three songs from that album. The first song we're going to hear is a song called Junk. And Paul actually wrote this song back in 1968 when the Beatles went to work with the Maharishi in India. That was an incredibly fruitful time. That's also when he wrote the acoustic song Blackbird. And one of the habits that Paul had is a lot of times he'd be writing these gorgeous songs, but he wouldn't really have the lyrics yet. And this song, Junk, it's such a strange title, and the lyrics are so strange. It's one of the most beautiful songs I think he ever wrote. It sticks in my mind once I hear it. I can sing it for days and never grow tired of it. It's a beautiful song. So he does those recordings at his home studio. Slowly and surely, he goes back to Abbey Road, and he records two tracks at Abbey Road, which turn out to be, you know, the gems of the recording. And that's on February the 22nd. He records a song called Every Night, and then he also records the song Maybe I'm Amazed. So this is Paul's return to life, return to music, and the reason he's recording alone. Now, Linda sings backup vocals, but you're about to hear these songs, and I want you to really understand everything you hear on here is recorded by one person. And that's because he didn't have a band. So when we go on to Stevie Wonder, it's a total different situation. But the same result, one person completely establishing the vision, the atmosphere, the composition, and the execution of the music. This is Paul McCartney. The title of the album is McCartney, and it's his first solo album. Let's hear these songs.
Motor cars, handlebars, bicycles for two, broken-hearted jubilee. Parachutes, army blues, sleeping bags for two, sentimental jamboree.
Every night I just want to go out, get out of my head. Every day I don't want to get up, get out of my bed. Every night I want to lay out, and every day I want to do. But tonight I just want to stay in and be with you. and be with you.
Paul McCartney's solo recording. He plays all the instruments on this album. Named McCartney, and it was a point of contention for the Beatles when he released his album. John had told the other band members, you know, I want a divorce, I'm leaving the Beatles. But they hadn't really announced it, they hadn't really formalized it. And Paul finished recording his album, and he wanted to release it. And at the very same time, Apple was trying to release, you know, Let It Be, Abbey Road, and that sort of thing. So Paul gives this interview with the press on April the 10th, and the headlines, he says, well, I don't know if I'm returning after this solo work. I don't know if I'm returning to the Beatles. So the headlines are saying, okay, the Beatles are breaking up. And a week later, he releases his solo album. It didn't get a very good critical response. A lot of people felt that it was too simple, that it was, too sappy. But I've always loved this album, and I think that Neil Young really nailed it. In 1999, Neil Young inducts Paul McCartney into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he talks about this album, and here's what Neil Young says. I loved that record because it was so simple. And there was so much to see and to hear. It was just Paul. There was no adornment at all. There was no attempt made to compete with the things he had already done. And so out he stepped from the shadow of the Beatles. Neil Young. So Paul McCartney, master musician. We've been lucky in our lives to have this type of music recorded around us. And Stevie Wonder is also a master musician. His album called Songs in the Key of Life was released in September of 1976, and it's really his signature album. Rolling Stone lists it on their list of the greatest album of all times, and in 2005 it was preserved into the National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress. The United States Library of Congress called Songs in the Key of Life culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. So, what's the deal? By the time 1975 rolls around, Stevie Wonder had a huge international success, Grammy Awards. He had his albums Talking Book, Inner Visions, Fulfillingness, First Finale. Back-to-back successes, Album of the Year in 1974 and 1975. So by the end of 1975, Stevie Wonder has decided to quit the music industry. He's going to emigrate to Ghana to work with handicapped children. That just blew me away. Well, he changed his mind. He accepted a recording contract. And it was a 7-year contract for $37 million. It was with Motown Records. He signed the contract in 1975. And one of the things that turned his mind about recording is that they gave him full artistic control. So he just takes a year off. He doesn't perform. He goes away for a whole year. Leaves the whole music industry behind. And he writes all the music for Songs in the Key of Life. When they're recording this album, the working title was Let's See Life the Way It Is. And so he records this album pretty much at one studio in Hollywood, Crystal Sound Studio. And Wonder is a perfectionist. You know, every track, he spends hours. Here's a quote from Stevie. He said, I was not eating or sleeping while everyone around me struggles to keep up. If my flow is going, I keep on until I peak. So here's the difference. It's a double album. There's 130 people that worked on this album. He's surrounded by the greats of his time. And yet, when you look at the liner notes, you'll see there are several tracks where he is the only musician. We're about to hear those tracks, some of those tracks. We're going to be hearing Have a Talk with God, Village Ghetto Land, and then we're going to hear a song, Knocks Me Off My Feet. Now, until I did a little research, I had no idea that Stevie Wonder is playing every instrument in this recording. He was so happy with this album. In 1995, he gave an interview in Q Magazine. He said, of all the albums, Song in the Key of Life is I'm most happy about. Just the time, being alive then, to be a father, and then letting go and letting God give me the energy and strength I needed. You know, it's like one of the greatest albums. And Stevie Wonder has returned to the stage in 2013. He did a live concert performance of the entire music from Songs in the Key of Life in Los Angeles. So these tracks, Stevie Wonder is the only musician playing anything. There are a couple of backup vocals being sung by other people, but he is playing every instrument, every part, in these songs. This is a solo recording, Stevie Wonder from Songs in the Key of Life.
There are people who have let the problems of today conclude that for them life is not the way. But every problem has an answer, and if yours you cannot find, you should talk it over to him. He'll give you peace of mind. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. Without a friend, never communicating with one who lives within, forgetting all about the one who never ever let you down. And you can talk to him anytime, he's always around. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk. Solving the problems of all men, women, little boys and girls. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. Love's too much, too bad. Just go talk to God, he cares. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. Thank
to go with me down my dead end street. Would you like to come with me to village ghetto land? See the people lock their doors while robbers laugh and steal. Beggars watch and eat their meals from garbage cans. Thank you. glass is everywhere. It's a bloody scene. Killing plagues the citizens as they own police. Children play with rusted cars. Swords cover their hands. Politicians laugh and drink, drunk to all demand. Buying dog food now. Starvation roams the street. Babies die before they're born, infected by the greed. Now some folks say that we should be glad for what we have. Tell me, would you be happy? Will it get to land?
I see us in the park, strolling the summer days of imaginings in my head, and words from our hearts told only to the winds, felt even without being said. I don't wanna bore you with my trouble. About your love.
about your love and makes me weak and knocks me off my feet and knocks me off my feet. I don't wanna bore you with it.
Oh, but I love you, I love you, I love you.
I don't wanna bore you.
Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life from 1976. In an interview in Rolling Stone in 2003, Elton John said, let me put it this way, whenever I go in the world, I always take a copy of Songs in the Key of Life. For me, it's the best album ever made, and I'm always left in awe after I listen to it. I gotta agree with Elton John on that. What an incredible recording. Michael Jackson called it his favorite album. Prince called it the best album ever recorded. And it's a real different situation when Stevie Wonder has 130 people, engineers, musicians, all kinds of people working on this project with him. And yet those tracks that we just heard, he's the only musician in the studio. He's the only person performing on those three songs that we just heard from Songs in the Key of Life. What a masterful thing. I'm Kathy Geary. You're listening to Now and Then. And the idea I'm mulling over today is, in this technological age of wonders, how one person can go into a recording studio and lay down the drums and the bass and the guitar and the vocals and the keys, whatever they want, and produce an entire recording where they are the only person performing. That never was really possible until our technology and recording made that possible. And so you got to wonder what makes a person want to do that. You know, Stevie Wonder's situation, Paul McCartney, he lost his band. He was trying to find himself. But it's just my humble opinion. For Stevie Wonder, it was like he had such a clear, crystal clear idea of exactly what he wanted that it was just straight ahead, easier, and the best service of the music for him to do it himself. Well, these musicians that I'm featuring today are not the only people that do a lot of solo recording. When I look at the career of Sting, who is also a masterful composer and an incredible instrumentalist, incredible bass player, one of the reasons that the Police broke up, Andy Summers and Stuart Copeland and Sting, Andy Summers said that, you know, Sting would write a song and he would go into the studio and he would record every part. He would record the entire song as a solo and then he'd bring it to the guys and he'd say, here's your parts. This is what I want it to sound like. And they just didn't feel like they had enough collaboration going on. Well, you know, Tom Petty probably does the same thing. He'll probably record a song. But the critical point, U2, same way, Bono writes a song. Coldplay, the same way, Chris Martin writes a song. The difference in those situations is that it's allowing the people that you play with to contribute their parts to your song and not lock it down yourself, not control it, not hold it so tight to you that you allow other people to collaborate with you. So it's a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating thing. I was surprised and saddened, as most of the world was, when we recently lost Prince. Prince Rogers Nelson was born on June 7th in 1958 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he passed away on April the 21st in 2016. I looked into Prince and I found things that I had never known. He was born in Minneapolis, and his parents were both African American. And all of his ancestors are in Louisiana. All four of his grandparents come from Louisiana. So he's got a lot of Southern roots genetically. His father was a pianist and a songwriter. His mother was a jazz singer. And Prince was named after his father. Prince's father was a songwriter and a performer, and he had a stage name. Prince's father's stage name was Prince Rogers. And he was a jazz, he had a jazz group called the Prince Rogers Trio. And Prince's father said, I named my son Prince because I wanted him to do everything I wanted to do. Prince had a nickname as a kid. It was Skipper. So when he's 7 years old, he writes his very first song. Prince's first song is written on his father's piano. It's called Funk Machine. He's got big ideas for a seven-year-old. When he's only 18 years old, he signs a recording contract with Warner Brothers Records. There's a man there locally that helps him, a man named Husney, manages him, helps him get the contract. And Warner Brothers Records, here's this 18-year-old kid, and they give him complete creative control for 3 albums and ownership of all the publishing rights. That's an incredible deal. So Prince and his manager, they leave Minneapolis. They move to Sausalito, California. And Prince records his first album. It's called For You, at Record Plant Studios. Prince writes, produces, arranges, composes, and plays all 27 instruments on his first album. I had no idea. It wasn't until his 5th album, which he released in October of 1982. The album is called 1999, and that's really his breakthrough album. And the thing that's astonishing for me is I really didn't know Prince's early work. This is 1999 is when I first heard his music. And I had no idea until I looked at the liner notes. It's a double vinyl album, and it's just got incredible purple graphics, and it's just gorgeous. But in the liner notes, you see that he's the only person playing any of the instruments. He sings everything and plays everything. There's a lot of synth on this. The album 1999, he said that it was inspired by the sci-fi movie at the time called Blade Runner. And Blade Runner had a lot of synth sounds, otherworldly stuff going on in the soundtrack for that movie. So Prince says that's what inspired him. And I have to assume in this case, why did he record the album himself? Because he could. Because nobody else really could get their mind around the genre and the type of music that he wanted. So we're about to hear the title track to 1999. We're going to hear 1999. We're going to hear Little Red Corvette. And then we're going to hear really strange and cool. Like, it's disco jazz. I don't know what to call it. It's called All the Critics Love You in New York. But before I play this, I just want to read the lyrics for 1999. I gotta admit, I always thought this was a party song. I never knew what the song lyrics were. I mean, you know, 2000, party over. I figured we're gonna party. I figured it was just like, let's get down, you know, just a happy song. But when I looked at the lyrics, I was blown away. It's about war. It's about Armageddon. It's about the devastation of mankind. I was dreaming when I wrote this. Forgive me if it goes astray. But when I woke up this morning, I could have sworn it was Judgment Day. And the sky was all purple there. There were people running everywhere, trying to run from the destruction. And you know, I didn't even care. Because they say, 2000, party over. Whoops, out of time. So tonight, I'm going to party like it's 1999. So if I gotta die, I'm gonna listen to my body tonight, because they say, party over, oops. If you didn't come to party, don't bother knocking on my door. I got a lion in my pocket, and baby, he's ready to roar. Everybody's got a bomb. We could all die any day. But before I'll let that happen, I'll dance my life away. Because they say 2000, party over. Whoops, out of time. Mummy, why does everybody have a bomb? Prince, 1999.
Don't worry, I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Yeah. pressure now by the way you parked your car sideways. I don't wouldn't last. It's the other kind of person that believes in making out once, love them and leave them fast. I guess I must be dumb. She had a pocket full of horses, children and some of them abused. But it was Saturday night, I guess that makes it alright. You see, what have I got to lose? Saw all the pictures of the jockeys that were there before me. Believe it or not, I started to worry. I wondered if I had enough class. But it was Saturday night, I guess that makes it alright.
Go! critics love you in New York. You don't have to keep the beat. They'll still think it's neat in New York. You can wear what you want to. Doesn't matter in New York. You could cut off all your hair. I don't think they'd care in New York.
All the critics love.
You can play what you want to. All the critics love you in New York. They won't say that you're naive if you play what you believe in New York. Purple love and more, it's all you're in it for. But don't show it. The reason that you're cool is 'cause you're from the old school and they know it.
All the critics love.
Want to. All the critics love you in New York.
You can dance if you want to.
All the critics love you in New York.
Prince Rogers Nelson passed away April the 21st, 2016. And there are cities across the United States that were holding tributes and vigils. They lit buildings and bridges in purple. Facebook said it had 61 million Prince-related interactions. Saturday Night Live aired a special episode in his honor titled Goodnight, Sweet Prince, consisting of comedy skits involving him, his musical performances from the show, the Saturday Night 40th Anniversary Special After Party. AMC Theaters screened Purple Rain during the week following his death. MTV interrupted its programming and aired a marathon of his music, Prince videos, and Purple Rain. As of April 24th, since his passing, his catalog sold 654,000 albums, 2.8 million individual song downloads. The United States Senate passed a resolution praising Prince and his achievements as a musician. This is Prince, When Doves Cry.
We'll be right back.
I'm Kathy Geary. You've been listening to Now and Then. Today's program featured the solo recordings of Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, and Prince. I hope you enjoyed this program. Thank you so much for listening.